Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, June 29th, 2017. Unidentified gunmen opened fire on a vehicle traveling along the Jubabor Road in Manglak County, killing nine people and injuring others.
Among the dead, we have three not yet unknown because we have not got any identification for them. But we are still investigating.
And young South Sudanese women say the stigma of menstruation should end and access to sanitary napkins should be prioritized in schools.
I'm calling upon all the well-wishers to come and support this because we need to give these girls their dignity back. Like they say, some of them cannot go to school anymore because it's so shameful for you to walk around with blood all over your clothes.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Unidentified gunmen opened fire on a vehicle traveling along the Jubabor Road in Mangala County in Jubek State. According to police, the Wednesday evening attack killed nine people and injured scores of others. Paulo Ilaria Pataka, the Mangala County Commissioner, confirmed the incident. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
The spokesperson for the South Sudan's National Police Service, Brigadier General Daniel Justin Bola, says the attack happened at Kubri Mahandesin area. He says the passenger service van was heading from Bor to Juba. He says the dead include a 16-year-old boy and three women. He says all the victims are the South Sudanese nationals.
Among the dead, we have three not yet unknown because we have not got any identification for them. But we are still investigating.
Bola says four other passengers were wounded in the attack. There have been several deadly attacks along the roads leaving Juba for Bor and Nimule, leaving dozens killed and injured. Bola says the identity of the attackers is not yet known, but police are still carrying investigation.
Sometimes we face difficulties with this arms group. Some are cattle raiders, some are arms group from the opposition. And so a lot of people are there and people are... So we need to investigate this so that we know who exactly is behind this.
Bola admits that many people are now afraid of traveling by road because they fear of their lives. He says some people also fear they could be robbed. Bola says security operatives are providing escorts to accompany vehicles traveling on the two roads. But he says only a few people choose to join the convoys.
You see, we advise people we are escorting the buses from Juba to Bor, as well as from Bor to Juba. And then sometimes if you have an for a very urgent matter which needs you to travel, we have been telling people that they are to consult with us so that we secure their travel.
In a separate incident this morning, Bola says armed men attacked a Catholic church in Juba's Gurei neighborhood and stole a vehicle belonging to the parish.
This morning at around 8:30, armed criminals using a primo, they attacked a Catholic church in Gurei residential area and robbed a vehicle, Land Cruiser, white in color. They ran away heading to Juba. It is just we are still searching for them.
Officials from the Catholic Church were not immediately available for comment. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
South Sudanese women are calling on the government to implement provisions of the August 2015 peace agreement that guarantees women occupy at least 25% of positions in the executive arm of government. Susan Felix, chairperson of Jubek State's Women's Union, says the agreement also requires leaders of the warring parties to ensure their forces do not sexually abuse women. For VOA News, Nabil Biaja reports from Juba.
South Sudanese women met in Juba today to discuss the findings of a gender analysis of the 2015 peace agreement. The analysis was part of a report prepared by the Women's Monthly Forum, a pressure group that works to ensure that both parties implement the accord. The United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, funded the exercise. In the report, the forum acknowledged good provisions in the agreement that ensure women's participation in the transitional government of national unity. The agreement requires the SPLM faction in government to nominate 4 women ministers, while the SPLM in opposition is to nominate 3. The agreement also requires the warring parties to appoint at least 2 women as deputy ministers. Suzanne Felix, the chairman of Jubek States Women Union, says, only some of those provisions have been implemented.
We are talking of the percentage of women participation, and it is 25% in all the branches, especially in the executive decision-making. We need to be included, and we believe we will be included.
Felix says the agreement also provides seats for women in various transitional and security institutions, including the Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangements Monitoring Mechanism, Strategic Defense and Security Review Board, and the Economic and Financial Management Authority, among others. Betty Sunday is Chief Executive Officer at the Community Empowerment for Progress organization. She says while women's participation is guaranteed, although to a limited degree, the government should give more important roles to women in government.
We need women to be in some of the positions that the government is giving, like for example in the states. There are no female states, no female governors. We have 33 states or 34 states. In those 34 states, women are just 1 or 2 women, if I'm not mistaken. Well, they deputize the governors. Women participation is key to development.
Veronica Gordon is the deputy coordinator at the Women's Monthly Forum. She says the 2015 peace agreement should have set aside key roles for women to assume in the various branches of government, including the top leadership.
There is no senior level position in the executive. For example, the presidential position, the vice president, the first vice president, set aside for a woman. The other gap is the agreement does not contain a specific provision providing for the participation of women in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly and the Council of States. And the agreement does not contain a specific provision providing for the participation of women in the judiciary.
The women also say they must be represented in the top leadership of government in order to influence policies. Betty Oboy is Commissioner for South Sudan Peace Council, a government-appointed body that oversees and advises on peace-related matters. Oboy says women must lead some of the commissions tasked with promoting national reconciliation and heal the wounds all South Sudanese have suffered during the war.
For instance, the most important is the truth, healing and reconciliation, whereby they say at least out of the 7 commissioners, 2 have to be women. But does the common woman understand that? Or is it us, the elite, who are trying to mask? You know, if we mask, then the other woman at the grassroots or at the middle level may be lost. They will not know even what is happening.
Oboy says the government and civil society must convince women about the importance of their participation in reconciliation and in politics so they can fill some of the various roles now becoming available to them. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Ellen Ratner is a Washington-based journalist who has seen both the good and the bad in South Sudan. Yet, through her foundation, she is trying to make a positive difference in the lives of ordinary South Sudanese. Ratner does it by having her people interact directly with residents and leave the worrying about political leaders to others. Carol Van Dam has more from Washington in the second of our 3-part series about making a difference in South Sudan.
Ellen Ratner realizes there are plenty of people in South Sudan who need help, especially women. Rape, beatings, hunger, and female genital mutilation have been somewhat commonplace occurrences in parts of the country for decades. For that reason, Ratner's GEMS Development Foundation does not just focus on one thing alone. GEMS helps women dealing with chronic depression, fear, sleeplessness, nightmares, and other symptoms of post-traumatic stress through a pilot project established by Dr. Luca Dancur in his clinic in Wanjok. 2 benchmark measures of PTSD were taken at the beginning of the program and used at regular intervals to assess the progress of participants. The results have been encouraging. They have shown that overall mood improvement of 48% and an overall improvement of PTSD symptoms of 65%. If the women participate in the program, they get a female goat, which gives up to a liter of milk a day, often making the difference between staying healthy and malnutrition in South Sudan. Ratner says women also get to take part in a small handicraft business making pendants called Hearts for South Sudan.
We have these hearts that I'm wearing and that you have in the bag in front of you. People, this is radio, so people can't see it.
They're beautiful. They're they're glittery.
They're Swarovski crystals. We bring them over to South Sudan, and then our women make them. In order to make them, they have to be part of our breathing project, which is post-trauma stress.
But Gems and Goats for the Old Goat does not just help women. In March, Ratner's Foundation brought two mental health workers from Juba Teaching Hospital to Boston, Massachusetts, where they learned for a week about psychiatric day treatment for men and women. Ratner says they used what they learned and applied it to South Sudanese patients.
We started something called Prolixin and Donuts way back 40 years ago, where we would give our patients some food, usually donuts and coffee, and then we would give them a shot of Prolixin. Well, Prolixin is no longer under the 17-year patent, and so now it's available. And what we do is we take patients off the streets in Juba, and we give them a bath, we give them a haircut, we give them new clothes, and we give them some food.
They also give them a shot so that the antipsychotics begin to work. There is only one professional psychiatrist in all of South Sudan, Dr. Atong Ayul Longar Akol, who works with Ratner's Foundation to treat psychiatric patients across the country. Ratner describes one of Dr. Atong's patients whom she treated in the former state of Western Bahar al Ghazal.
There was one man she tells the story of, I've never met the man, who was chained to a tree for 12 years in Wau. The medicine man thought the rain would be good for him. So she got him on the shot, and he is now working at his family farm.
That kind of story is not uncommon in small villages and payams of South Sudan, so Ratner decided to do something about it. Her foundation began sending South Sudanese medical students to school in Grenada, and Ratner says they have built in a kind of insurance policy to make sure that once those students graduate, they come back to work in South Sudan.
Dr. Sholin Espinoza is our medical director. We have three students. Full fare, airfare, food, everything at St. George's Medical School in Grenada. Two of them just entered the white coat ceremony. I went down for that.
And those two are going to go to South Sudan and work?
Well, we have a little deal with the medical school saying they're not going to release that transcript unless those people go back to South Sudan.
Ratner says Dr. Mayana Chek, who is trained and had worked in London for 18 years, is now dean of Juba Medical School and is getting his PhD at St. George's. The foundation also pays for the tuition and fees for eight South Sudanese students who went to St. George's for pre-med but did not quite make it into medical school. They are now enrolled in Juba Medical School, and it's a six-year program. Ratner says it is a problem when medical students that GEMS trains leave to work for better-paying NGOs in the country, but she says she hopes the students eventually return to work as physicians in a wheel where their families live. Tomorrow, we'll learn more about why GEMS teaches South Sudanese about the Holocaust. Carol Van Dam for VOA News, Washington.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Queen of England recognizes a South Sudanese woman for her work in girl-child education in South Sudan. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
Is it okay to tell a small white lie to get out of trouble?
No, no, no. Because whether it's a white lie, a big lie, a small lie, it's the same thing, it's a lie. By the time it comes up worse than the way it would have been in the actual sense. So you better tell the truth in the first place and you get over it.
Yes, it's okay, it's okay. Because the world we live in, sometimes you really need to do some small. Thank God you even said small. You do some small lies to get out of trouble.
Yeah, in my opinion, sometimes to tell a white lie is okay because some people cannot understand person easily. Unless you have to tell just something to take you out of them, then later on you will come and clarify it to them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese has been awarded the prestigious Member of the British Empire honor from the Queen of England. Akuja Madingde Gareng received the award 2 weeks ago for her contribution towards encouraging girls to stay in school in South Sudan. Akuja says girls' education remains a challenge in South Sudan, and old cultural practices prevent girls from enrolling in schools across the country. She says the award came as a surprise.
Basically, I found out about my nomination for the MB stands for Member of British Empire, end of last year in December, as part of the New Year's list. That was in Juba. So I was given an opportunity to say yes or no. And the award for recommendation or the nomination for the work that I've been doing on girls' education and social development in South Sudan in general.
This award is in recognition of advocating for girl child education.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about your work in South Sudan.
So I work for a program called Girls Education South Sudan. This is a UK aid-funded program which is targeted at removing barriers of girls' education particularly, but education in general for both girls and boys. So we work on a number of activities or interventions which are intended to kind of comprehensively and concurrently address the barriers. So from issues to do with sort of the negative social and cultural barriers, for example, early marriage or forced marriage, early pregnancy, so on, of girls. We do that through behavior change communication on radio and community outreach. We also work on addressing barriers to do with poverty, basically the fact that a lot of families are not in a position to afford to send their children to school, you know, as a whole. But particularly when it comes to a choice between a girl and a boy, usually families decide to send their boys to school rather than the girls.
Let's talk about some of the challenges that you face when you talk about early marriage, when you talk about girls dropping out of school because of pregnancies. How are you addressing these issues?
Definitely a big issue. So what we do, we really try and have an open kind of discussion with communities. So we produce programs around the pertinent topics. So if we say today the topic is about early pregnancy or early marriage, we produce drama programs about stories related to that and how the experience of girls has been. And these programs are actually produced in local languages so we can reach people that, you know, our target group. So at the moment we are producing in about 9 local languages. So these topics are then either broadcasted on local FM or are sent out on portable radios. And then the idea is that people will listen to these programs and have a discussion. We don't expect people to immediately change their behavior, but we expect that by reaching people with the positive messages about girls' education, eventually that will change their behavior and encourage them to send their daughters to school.
You've been recognized by the British government for the work that you're doing for the people of South Sudan. Could you tell us about your level of cooperation with the local authorities in the areas where you go because of some of these cultural barriers?
I think without the support of the communities particularly, we would not have succeeded. You know, we would not have achieved what we achieved. I think the way we approach the program is that we initially sort of went into the communities and understood what they really needed. Yeah, we've asked them, what is it that is preventing you from sending your daughters to school? The 3 barriers that I mentioned, which is poverty, negative social cultural attitude, as well as the quality of education, were the top 3 issues that are preventing parents from sending their girls to school. So the government, in a sense, has priorities. So we cannot work in parallel. We had to find, you know, activities that fit within the framework of the government.
That's Akuja Madingde Gareng speaking with John Tanza from London. Akuja is a recent recipient of the prestigious Member of the British Empire honor for her efforts to encourage girls to stay in school in South Sudan. She is a team leader of Girls Education South Sudan, or GESS, that helps transform lives through education. GESS is an initiative of the South Sudan Ministry of General Education and Instruction and is supported with funding from UKAID. In part two of this interview, Akuja talks about what it takes to operate in South Sudan. New research suggests that the ability of children in Africa to perform well in school could be dramatically improved through the provision of basic malaria education and treatment. While less fatal among older children, malaria infections often impact on a child's ability to concentrate, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
Most malaria prevention programs focus on the under fives. Many older school children continue to harbour malaria parasites without displaying any symptoms of the disease. Left untreated, the child's health often deteriorates, says lead researcher Dr. Sean Clark of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
The malaria parasites destroy the red blood cells, and as a consequence of that, you get chronic anemia in children. Generally, children who are anemic feel weak, they're tired, they're generally lethargic, they're going to be less active and less fully engaged.
The research involved nearly 2,000 school children in Mali, led by Save the Children and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, alongside the National Institute for Public Health Research in Mali. Around half the children were given a malaria control package delivered by their teachers, which included prevention education, insecticide-treated nets and anti-malarial treatment. Malaria infection rates fell from 80% to just 5%, and cases of anemia were almost halved compared to the control group. Again, Dr. Clark.
And the children's capacity to pay attention for longer was increased.
Save the Children has helped expand the programme to 400 schools in Mali. It is the second African country to host the trial.
So the first study was done in Kenya, an area of year-round transmission. The study was done in Mali, an area with malaria concentrated in just a few months. And the fact that we saw similar results in both settings would suggest that where malaria is a significant problem and the levels of infection are high, then you might expect to see similar impact in other settings.
Aid workers say preventing anemia in Malian schoolgirls is particularly important because of high teenage marriage and pregnancy rates. Anemia during pregnancy can lead to a low birth weight and a higher risk of child mortality. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Meanwhile, in South Sudan's capital, Juba, some schoolgirls complain that they often are unable to attend school because they cannot afford sanitary pads during their menstrual cycles. However, a former Miss South Sudan is distributing free absorbent pads to some schoolgirls in Juba to ensure girls are able to attend school throughout the month. For VOA News, Tito Justin reports from Juba.
18-year-old Josephine Dominic says when her monthly period started 5 years ago, she first dropped out of school. Josephine, who is a pupil at Gumbo Primary School outside Juba, says she could not afford sanitary pads and felt uncomfortable in school where girls and boys shared one toilet.
I could not go to school because sometimes my period will come abruptly and my clothes will be soiled. I could not imagine coming home with dirty clothes. This is one thing that prevents one from going to school. You fear to go to school because when your friends see that your clothes is dirty, they may bully you and you feel ashamed.
For South Sudanese girls like Josephine, sanitary pads are expensive and inaccessible. In addition, menstruation is considered a taboo topic, something that makes girls suffer shame, embarrassment, and exclusion from schools or even social activities. Josephine says her parents did not purchase pads for her. She says she only returned to school when her elder sister started buying some for her. But she says dealing with her periods is still a problem at school because there is no changing room. 17-year-old Aban Abol is a senior one student at Juba Commercial Secondary School. Aban says when she started experiencing her monthly menstrual cycle at the age of 12, she had no clue what was happening. In a majority of South Sudanese communities, menstruation is a private issue and not spoken about, something that leaves girls shy and only able to discuss it among peers in whispers. Aban says when she experienced her first period, she thought she was either sick or experiencing something that was abnormal. She stopped going to school because she felt unclean. Aban is calling on authorities to provide free sanitary pads to schoolgirls like her.
They have to get it free because they got no money. The majority of ladies, they don't have work to do. And majority of families, they are not coordinating with their ladies. So they need something for free at least monthly.
15-year-old Esther James is in primary 8 at a school in Melekia. Esther says she too often misses school during her periods because she cannot afford pads. She says sometimes her friends at school offer them to her.
If my period starts during school time, I often rush to our senior woman teacher. I tell her what has happened. And if she has something, she often gives me. She buys me pads otherwise when my period starts and there are no sanitary pads. I go home because of shame since I'm unable to afford the pads.
Flora Kiden is a senior woman teacher at Nyokron Central Academy in Juba. Kiden says many parents are not concerned and a result many, including orphaned girls, drop out of schools because of menstrual hygiene issues. Kiden says she agrees that girls should be given free sanitary pads to motivate them to continue their education. She says she believes it's everyone's responsibility to keep girls in school.
We need not to leave these girls behind, because when we leave them behind, we are driving the whole world behind, simply because they have big roles to play in the public, in community development, right from the government to the social sectors up to the community.
Betty Miller is a mother of one. She says sometimes parents can't afford to buy sanitary pads for their daughters. But she says if that is the case, they should help their daughters find alternatives.
But for parents who cannot afford, please make sure you provide this local material, old clothes, maybe some kitenge, some what, which are not now in use. You can cut them, then maybe sew it in a needle so that it be a bit heavy. Then you teach these girls that this one can be reused, it can be changed, it can be washed.
According to a study carried out by the Netherlands Development Organization, girls use various materials including pieces of mattresses, leaves, tree trunks, or herbs to reduce blood flow. But these are ineffective, uncomfortable, and can lead to infections. To help girls stay in school, the former Miss South Sudan 2015 to 2016, Ajakir, is providing some schoolgirls with free sanitary pads and soap. Miss Kir says she wants to keep girls in school so that they get education for a better future.
I'm calling upon all the well-wishers to come and support this, because we need to give these girls their dignity back. Like they say, some of them cannot go to school anymore because it's so shameful for you to walk around with blood all over your clothes.
Kiri has so far distributed sanitary pads to 100 girls and plans to reach 1,000 girls at the end of this year. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Jao Geru by Freedom Boys.
You're our people. Got to listen to this track and take the meaning. We are the boys in the land. Take the better choice for your freedom. This is the last chance.
We You've been listening to Freedom Boys with the song Jao Geru. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your cars and homes. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ma umo numo sei le yakwana.